this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns and those who dig. You dig.
Fokusi letošnjega Motovuna. Motovun, grič v srču Istre slikovito srednjeveško naselbino, je gotovo skozi celo poletje prepreden skupinami tartufov lačnih turistov iz tu in tam. A zares zaživi in zasije v tistem tednu, ko gosti regionalno precej uveljavljeni filmski festival. Tega je leta 1999 ustanovil hrvaški igralec Rajko Grlić in se je tako minuli teden odvil že 20-tič. Čeprav se svojim prijetno neodvisnim, zanesljivo raznolikim filmskim programom trudi ostati prijetno majhen in butičen, pa festival z nekaterimi programskimi vsebinami vendarle že sega onkraj meja Istre ali Hrvaške. Če to morda še ni očitno po tekmovalnem programu, ki je letos motovunski propeler prinesel kolumbijski kriminalni drami Ubiti Jezusa, kritiško nagrado Fipreši pa prav tako kolumbijskemu filmu Ptice poletja, pa je rast gotovo čutiti po nekaterih gostih, žirantih in govorcih festivala. Med temi velja ob častih gostih, častnih gostih, Raditu Šerbedži in Mustafi Nadareviću tokrat v prvi vrsti izpostaviti lanskega dobitnika Kanske zlate palme in enega relevantnejših evropskih režiserjev zadnjih let ali, kakor so ga velikopotezno predstavili v napovedi pogovora na festivalu.
Among the 10 most important directors of 21st century, Ruben Östlund.
Östlund se je o pogovoru sredi žgočega sobotnega dne izkazal za iskrivega sogovornika, ki z rokava ves čas stresa zabavne anekdote in z njimi ponazarja, iz kje črpa ideje za sociološke zaplete svojih filmov. Tako smo danimo izvedeli, da so se tragikomični pripetljaji, kakršni so kraja in sledenje iPhona iz filma Kvadrat, navidezni snežni plas iz Više sile in zaigrani rob banke iz Incidenta pred banko, vsi res zgodili režiserju ali njegovim bližnjim. Östlund je, na primer, okoliščine razvijanja zapleta z omenjenim snežnim plazom v filmu Više sila pojasnil z naslednjimi besedami.
But anyway, go back to the force majeure. So I thought of that too. Okay, use these very trivial situations in a tourist environment. And then I have a friend of mine that is an actor. And I told him about this avalanche clip that I thought was like an inspiration. And he is like, okay, he's listening. And then the next day he comes back to me and he says, you know, what if it's the father in a family that runs away and he has to come back to the table afterwards? And in that moment I understood, okay, this is the film. This is the setup for one film. I don't need anything more. Because I could immediately feel how, like, you know, I got cold of identifying myself with being that father coming back to the table. And what I did then after that was that I was telling this story over and over and over again. I was telling it to everybody that I met. It's such a beautiful situation. And when I told it to people, there were so many stories that were coming back to me. And so the method when it comes to using that is like to try it out on people. And people have so many experiences that you can use and steal ideas from and so the method for me is not to be like, okay, I'm sitting and writing myself at home. I'm trying to be open and tell the topic over and over again and get things back.
Bolj kot sam filmski medij je bil tako tema pogovora njegov svojevrsten sociološki pristop k pripovednemu raziskovanju vsakdana v sodobni zahodni družbi. Na ta način mu za scenarije niso potrebni posebni neverjetni zapleti, ampak se v slogu opazovalnega humorja upira na majhne detajle iz naših življenj.
No death threats, nothing like that. Only, you know, have to stand in a car queue for 6 hours or something, waiting for a ferry for 6 hours. Well, just go into the trivialities of when our bad sides is brought up to the surface, even if nothing really have happened. And I just the other night I came up with a great idea also. What if to make a movie on an airplane and the entertainment system goes down. You know, it's a long flight, 14 hours. We are very sorry to inform you, but the entertainment system doesn't work. No. I want to see on the consequences what happened on that airplane. You know, people starting drinking, they will have relationship problems. I mean, this plane, it has to do an emergency landing, I promise you. Then, for Force Majeure, I read an investigation about ferry catastrophes. So I also tried to find a sociological thing that I also can bounce the idea against. And this ferry catastrophe examination, it showed that the percentage of survivor from a ferry catastrophe, the one that survives are men in a certain age. And the one that dies are women and children. And the outcall that they do women and children first in the lifeboat, okay, they do it, but we don't live up to it. So when it comes to survival instinct, and then culture is put out, and the one that have the ability of acting egoistic are men. And this is very fun to tell the audience before I screen Force Majeure. I say, okay, are there any couples in the audience here tonight? And then I say, you can look at this movie as a relationship test. And then I also tell them, you maybe think that your husband or your boyfriend will protect you. Statistically, he won't.
Pri filmu Kvadrat pa je na primer v uvodnem delu v ospredje vstopilo vprašanje tako imenovanega učinka opazovalca.
And from a behavioristic point of view, I think if we would teach it early from school that when you are in a public space and something like this happens, a way of breaking that passivity is to grab another person and say, should we do something? So instead of putting guilt on the individuals and say, oh, why didn't you do anything, you're so mean, you can have a behavioristic approach to it and try to create knowledge about it. But if you find these situations, and I think that a lot of stand-up comedy is using these kind of material in order to make the audience identifying with some certain kind of behavior. And it's I always look for a dilemma. I always look for a dilemma. And a dilemma is, if you just break it down what it is, you have two or more options, but none of them are easy. So if you do that way, it will have consequences. Will you go the other way and do another way?
Can be worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Poleg tega se Ostlund ni želel predstavljati kot poseben cinefil, temveč je rad opozarjal na svoje začetke, zaznamovane s snemanjem smučarskih filmov in predvsem na svoje navdušenje nad kreativnostjo, ki jo prinaša portal YouTube. Marsikateri poslušalec je z ušesi pristrigal tudi ob Ostlundovih pogledih na švedsko filmsko zgodovino in seveda na letošnjega slavljenca Bergmana.
But that is also because the Swedish film industry or the Swedish film history is a little bit divided in two parts. So you have Ingmar Bergman on one side, and on the other side you have Roy Andersson and a director called Bo Widerberg. And when I started at the film school, I became friend with the producer of Roy Andersson and Bo Widerberg. So suddenly I was brought into that part. So I never really got to know Bergman except from a distance, and I was supposed to not like him. I learned that already from the beginning. But I think it was very much a conflict between a younger generation that was brought up with the movement of the 60s and were left-wing politically engaged. And they were like revolting towards Bergman, that they thought had these bourgeoisie topics that only is about himself.
Too intellectual.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like this. So Bergman, but is he that good?
Not bad, quite good, yeah.
Če je po eni strani svojo prisotnostjo in tudi svojimi filmi program letošnjega Motovuna torej zaznamoval Ruben Östlund, je drugo ključno vsebinsko točko predstavljala izpostavitev filmskih vidikov Berlina. Filmi, na ta ali oni način povezani z nemško prestolnico, so bili razdeljeni v sklope. Film mora biti nevaren. Nebo nad Berlinom in Berlin po noči. Pričemer velja pri slednjem zaradi festivalske prisotnosti in žirije vloge režiserja Sebastiana Špilarja omeniti film Viktorija. Istočnico za poročanje je nudil tudi film Želja in zvok v zahodnem Berlinu od leta 1979 do 1989, ki ga je spremljal pogovor z njegovim protagonistom v Berlinu živečim angleškim glasbenikom Markom Riderjem. Rider se zdi poosebljanje panka in postpanka iz nekih drugih časov in je bil svojo pojavo fascinanten že v uri, ko je zbrana množica na festivalskem vrtu čakala na izginulega voditelja intervjuja. Ne nazadnje pa je zanimiva že zgodba o tem, kako je sploh postal objekt dokumentarca.
The producer of the film wanted me to do the sound, restore the sound of some of the records that he wanted to put in this movie. And I said to him, he explained to me that the film was going to be a film about 80s West Berlin. And so I said to him, oh, if you're looking for pictures, I have some things that you might be interested in to use for your footage. And I gave him a box of tapes, thinking nothing of it really. And he saw this footage and was like, I've never seen anything like this before. I've changed my plan. I want you to tell your story, what you did in West Berlin during the 80s. And so I wrote down everything, all the things I could remember, which wasn't very much. It was on the one A4 piece of paper. So I wrote down what I could remember, and he then looked for the footage which would correspond with my narrative. And then I became the protagonist, if you like, of the film. I tell my story of West Berlin, the things that I experienced and the people that I met and the adventures that I had. And to see West Berlin through my eyes as opposed to the eyes of a German.
Rider je v toku pogovora navrgel kup zgob o policijskem preganjanju glasbenika v vzhodni Nemčiji in seveda o druženju z Ianom Curtisom, Nickom Cavem, Einstürzen den Neubauten, Davidom Bowiem in še marsikom. Ob vseh teh imenih pa se je hitro porajalo tudi vprašanje, kaj razne velike in male umetnike privlačilo v Berlin tudi včasih, ko ta še ni bil neke vrste umetniška prestolnica Evrope.
It was cheap. It was cheaper to record an album in West Berlin because nobody went there. That was secondary, but it was cheap. That was the first motivator. It was cheap, you know. Bowie had finished Low in Berlin because he found out it was cheap, so he went there just to finish his record. And he was like, "Hey, Berlin's quite cool, you know. East Berlin was quite intriguing, you know." But it was the main factor was the fact that it was affordable, and then he came and realized, actually, Berlin is actually a really cool place because I can be David Bowie and no one notices. No one comes to me and go, hey, are you David Bowie? You could just blend in. And he needed an escape, Bowie. He was living in Los Angeles, you know. It was like cocaine paradise, you know. And he thought, I'm going to go to Berlin. It's like, I'll get rid of this addiction. And he went to Berlin, you know, drugs central Berlin, you know. Heroin and all kinds of things. Cocaine, there was no cocaine in Berlin. It was too expensive. But you got everything else. But he got clean there, actually. He stopped taking drugs, started painting and stuff. But Berlin was a place where he could find himself, actually, which I think is a really important factor about Berlin. So it's a really good, if you want to find out who you are, you go to Berlin and you find out who you are really quickly. And that's what he did.
Če se izpostavitev že tako preveč izpostavljenega Berlina morda letos ni zdela najbolj posrečena poteza, se je skozi like, kakršen je Rider, tako vendarle obrestovala. Ko smo že pri Riderju, lahko omenimo, da je, kot običajno, festivalske dni in večere tudi tokrat zaključeval skrbno kuriran glasbeni program, ki je Motovunskemu druženju dodajal še nove dimenzije neformalnosti. V vsakem primeru pa Motovun predstavlja, predvsem ostaja eden najlepših in najprijetnejših krajev, kjer bomo kadarkoli gledali filme. Po Motovunu se je potikal Jernej. Drugi del poročila s festivala sledi jutri ob 13. uri, ko bosta Anja in Klara pokomentirali in pokritizirali še nekatere ključne filme letošnjega programa.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns and those who dig. You dig.